Yep. It sucks because I feel like my analysis sucks today.
Howdy, y'all, and welcome to the Dynasty Guru Fantasy Baseball Podcast, episode 25. I'm your host, Ian Hudson, and I'm an editor here at the Dynasty Guru. With me is Keaton DeRocher and Patrick Magnus. Keaton, how are you doing today, buddy?
Well, I bought a new soap, but it turns out I was allergic to it. I tried to return it, but I lost my receipt.
I'm very sorry to hear that, Keaton. It seems like a very trying day. Patrick, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. My cat is sick, which is making me sad, and I need to take him to the vet because he's got like a cold. That's it. I'm great, other than my sick cat.
Oh, well, sorry to hear about your sick cat. I hope he gets better. Perhaps he bought a soap that he's allergic to.
Yeah, maybe he's allergic to the soap. That's the whole problem.
For today's show, we're not going to be discussing transactions and free agent signings since we last recorded, nor will we be discussing news and notes because we here at the Dynasty Guru dropped Brett Sayer's top 500 list, top 500 players for Dynasty Leagues. So we're going to be going over that, and as promised, we're going to tackle those outfield rankings that we had to push from last week. We're going to be going through all these lists, finding guys that Keaton and Patrick think are too high or too low. And because of the full plate today, we're going to have to skip the listener questions this round. We'll get back to you next time, and some of you guys may know that Keaton hosted a Reddit Ask Me Anything this morning. So I'm sure he answered plenty of your questions there. Keats, how'd the AMA go, buddy?
It went well. It was a lot of fun. That really was a blast. That was the first kind of like chat question and answer thing that I'd ever done. And I got a lot more questions than I thought I was going to get. But it was a ton of fun to answer. I'm definitely looking forward to doing more of those. And hopefully we'll be able to schedule them around when Patrick will be able to join in too. So we'll get some insight from him in there. I think he did pop in and answer a couple questions, mainly it was me and Adam, our third compadre of the triple play. So maybe we'll be able to get one in there where all three of us are there. But yeah, it was a ton of fun. That was a good time.
I popped in and answered one question. I can't even remember what the question was. They were just asking, I think, about a player, and my answer was simply no.
It was like a Strasburg something for Darvish trade or something like that.
Yeah, just went with a strong no, you know, hashtag analysis.
Strong content there. All right. Well, we had plenty of chit chat, but we've got a full plate tonight, gents. So let's dive right in. As I said, we released Brett Sayer's top 500 fantasy players for Dynasty Leagues, top 500 rankings. You can head over to dynastyguru.com and check it out. But in the meantime, we're going to be going through it here. Let's start with numbers 1 through 25 for guys that you guys think are too high or too low. Patrick, why don't you kick us off? You have some thoughts on Vladimir Guerrero at number 25. Tell us those thoughts, please.
Vlad is at 25, and I think, you know, Vladimir is a fantastic prospect, you know, but he's still real young, you know, which I know is an asset in Dynasty, but he's 18 at high A, and while the numbers look beautiful currently, do we really need to have him ranked above, say, like Clayton Kershaw or Anthony Rizzo? And by we, I mean Brett. I guess I kind of fail to see the rationale for having Vlad voted so high, or rather ranked so high. I know that this process is context based, and maybe you are in a situation where you need to move Kershaw because you're not going to be competing, and so you might scoop up Vladimir Guerrero. It just seems a little too aggressive to me.
I think you can make a case for it. We're dynasty format, so we're looking into the future, long-term value. Young, very, very talented players have a ton of value. And those are the guys that, like you kind of had mentioned in trade value, if you're trying to like acquire a Vladimir Guerrero Jr., it's going to take high-end talent like the other guys in the top 15, just because he's 20 years old, producing very, very well for his age and for his level. He's walking a lot more than he's striking out, and he's getting on base and hitting for average. So all of those things combined for his age and his level, if all that stuff continues and then we have, you know, he pans out like all of the scouts have said, then you probably do have a top 10 dynasty asset in, you know, 3 years or so. So for guys like that, it's always just projection at this point. But I know, Patrick, you're always one to hedge your bets and you're risk adverse. But I think I can see why he's this high for, you know, the long term fantasy outlook.
Yeah, but would you say draft him? Like, if you're going into a dynasty draft, I mean, are you going to draft him over Clayton Kershaw or Anthony Rizzo? I understand that, like, there's the possibility, but he's not even 20. He's 18 years old, and probably he'll start the year at AA this year. And best case scenario, he gets a cup of coffee at the end, but I doubt that. I would guess, you know, he's at least 2 years away from the majors. And then if we're doing this off 3 years, is he, you know, a top 10 asset in the majors during his rookie year? I guess maybe in dynasty formats, you know, as his profile solidifies, you know, as he goes up the ranks, proceeds through, you know, AA and AAA, you know, he might not even see AAA. He might go from AA to the majors. But yeah, it's the old man in me. I'm really just a crotchety, cynical old man at heart, and I just can't do it.
No, that's fine. I mean, to answer your question of, you know, would I draft him ahead of Kershaw or Rizzo? No, I wouldn't. Just playing devil's advocate, or not devil's advocate, but just kind of spinning that opposite end of, you know, painting the picture of why he's ranked so high.
Yeah, that was devil's advocate. You were playing it right.
There you go.
But yeah, I can see the argument for that. But yeah, I think I'm with you guys that I think he is too high. I would certainly take a number of guys ranked after him before him in a draft. And speaking of guys that we think are too high, Keaton, what are your thoughts on Byron Buxton at number 20?
I think it's a tad too high. We haven't seen him put it all together yet. I guess this is the the downside of what happens if a Vlad Guerrero type prospect doesn't pan out, right? Where does he end up ranked? We haven't seen it put together yet. And I mean, it comes in spurts. He has like a solid month and a half every season that reminds us, you know, why we love Byron Buxton, but then the rest of the season is garbage and injury riddled. And that's happened for 3 seasons now. He's striking out way more than we thought he was going to, and he's not walking really much at all. So that's leading to a 30% K rate. His average is, you know, topped out at 250 so far through one full season, two partial seasons. He's just getting hurt. He hasn't really been on the field as much as we hoped, but it just seemed like aggressive for the results that we've seen from Buxton so far.
Yeah, I am in complete agreement with you, Keaton, which I'm sure comes to no surprise to people that have listened to the past couple podcasts. He is exactly the kind of player that I fear as a steals truther, as I've been labeled. He he strikes out too much. He relies too much on his legs, and particularly in the outfield, he goes too hard. His plays are amazing. They're fun to watch, but as far as like fantasy security, it's not there. Even if he does figure it out, I feel like he's going to be a super streaky player. He's just right now for me, he's a player with tools to dream on, but not the kind of tools I want because this relies too much on his legs.
Keaton, that's a great point. Comparing Vlad Guerrero to Byron Buxton in sort of a before and after for dreaming on prospects like that. It's very well said. That's insightful.
Yeah, especially because if you look at his lower levels, the minors, he has a really high walk rate. Vlad's is like, I think he has like a 17%. I think that was a great comparison too.
Yeah, good job. So, we've talked about guys that are a little too high. Let's see who's too low in 1 through 25, which is kind of difficult to do, to be honest. I mean, we all have a couple of guys that we love irrationally. Anthony Rendon, I enjoy very much. I can see him behind these guys, but I would probably take him ahead of some of these guys. But Patrick, what do you think, if you had to pick one guy who you thought was too low in this tier, this 1 through 25, that you had to have a strong take on, who would it be?
Yeah, I mean, this is real, you know, we're in nitpicking area here because, you know, Brett's put together a fantastic list, and, you know, this top 25 is difficult to disagree with, but I guess if I'm taking one player, it's Jose Altuve. I just feel like he at seven is too low. You know, seeing guys like Francisco Lindor or even Trey Turner above him kind of just irks me just a smidge. You know, not that you can really go wrong with any of these top 10 guys, except for Trey Turner as your first round pick. But Altuve has just been a complete absolute stud. The guy makes all sorts of contact. Like, he Ks 12% of the time, which was like one of his highest. 12.7 is one of the higher seasons for him as far as K rate goes. The previous three seasons, if you look at it, you can see it's actually single digits. He's just a mind-blowing player, and I would just have him above Lindor for sure. And then, you know, Trey Turner should not be ranked as high as he should. Okay, I'm going to stop talking about Trey Turner.
Now, Patrick, I have to point out that Jose Altuve steals a lot of bases, and a lot of his value is derived from the fact that he steals a lot of bases. So you being a steals truther makes your opinion of Jose Altuve a little interesting. Would you still be thinking he was too low if steals were not in the equation? And if not, why are Jose Altuve's steals so valuable as to raise him up on this list, where some of the other guys you were talking about, their steals do not really matter so much?
Yeah, that's a great question, and a fair one. So just, I don't want to, I understand that steals are a category, you guys. Like, I know that, like, you need to have...
You could have fooled me. I mean, based on how you talk, I thought maybe you played in 4x4 leagues or something.
No, sorry. So, yes, the biggest difference for me is one, sustained success for Altuve. We're looking at years of major league success. You know, he's been up since 2011. But not only that, but he has such strong plate skills that he's not reliant on his legs, where like Byron Buxton is, you know, his strike zone is or his plate approach is a mess. So no, I'm not gonna like him. But Altuve's got that speed and the plate discipline and pop, you know. So like that's the biggest difference for me, is really the plate approach.
Okay, I could see that. I mean, the flip side, what one of your one of the pillars of your Steel's Truther manifesto is that speed is the first thing, one of the first things to diminish. And so when you say Altuve's been up for, you know, coming up on a decade, then that makes me think that the Steel's might be soon to regress. But if you're telling me that it's based heavily here, your fondness of him is based heavily on his plate approach and his pop and other things with the bat, then that's kind of a different story, and I get that.
But I mean, you are right that, like, if the Steals go away, he you know, he does lose significant value, and it is possible that his Steals decline, you know, within the next 3 years. But I think he's got at least 3 more years of this kind of production, and you know, these lists are typically, you know, projected for 3 to 5 years, right? So. Yeah, I think he's good, and I think the Steels are going to stick for a bit, and I don't hate him.
Well, it's impossible to hate Jose Altuve. So, speaking of assets that are still going to be valuable in 3 to 5 years, let's talk about another prospect that we have fairly high up in these ranks, Ronald Acuna. Keaton, I thought you had some words on Ronald. Is that right?
He's ranked 13th, which is really high for a guy who hasn't made it to the majors yet. But I think we're all pretty much aware of his helium and his value over the past year. People have been going bananas, really, just going after him in dynasty leagues, some trades. Some of the stuff I've seen from industry guys on trades that they've done for going after Acuna, there was one that included Kluber, like, and Altuve. It was like 2 top 10 guys for him, which was just nuts to me. But I just thought it'd be interesting just to talk about his value, because this is kind of another Buxton situation, right? Because Buxton was really the last guy I can think of that had this kind of value or like potential. I mean, Correa was a top draft pick and top prospect, but I feel like he didn't have quite the helium or kind of just nuts value that Buxton did. And Buxton didn't seem like the Buxton love was crazy at the time. And this kind of seems like it's completely dwarfed it. But I just thought it'd be an interesting conversation just to talk about guys that have that huge value and are, you know, prospects, and kind of what is the right way to approach either trading them away or trying to acquire them in a dynasty league.
Yeah, I totally agree with you in that Buxton was the last guy I can really remember who had the same kind of helium as the can't-miss, no-doubt superstar prospect. And now look at him. You know, I mean, he's still got some years ahead of him, but this speaks to the larger issue I think a lot of players have in dynasty leagues, in recency bias and paying attention to the new prospects rather than you know, paying more attention to the established guys who maybe don't have as high a ceiling, but the floor is much higher and the production is much steadier, and you can rely on them for years to come. I mean, I think for this league especially, I mean, one of the guys that we have in one of our leagues, Tom Trudeau, he's, as near as I can tell, fairly well known for being a prospects guy, and he will go hard in the paint for prospects in any draft, and he'll just tank the first year or two, and then just build a true dynasty. Now, with that comes Tom's evaluation during the season and subsequent seasons, where he will make trades constantly and consistently until he turns these prospects into other usable pieces. So that's one way to go about it. And the flip side of that is that in dynasty leagues, well-known players, established players whose ceilings aren't so high tend to be a little undervalued, and you can get some values later on in the draft, is what I find anyway. Patrick, what are your thoughts on Acuna in general, and in general prospect evaluation.
Acuna at 13 was a bit jarring for me when I saw it on Brett's list. But also, you know, we have to remember that these lists are crazy to make and that so much of them are in context, right? Because it really depends on what your strategy is. Like, we know that Tom likes to tank and just have all of these investments that turn into fantastic assets, and then he dominates, right? And the cost of acquiring Acuna is probably going in your league is quite high, so you probably have to trade a significant talent to acquire him. For me, it's all about contention cycle. I think, you know, obviously I don't want to have Acuna over, say, like, you know, Jose Ramirez or Paul Goldschmidt. But I definitely understand within context why. And that's my kind of thing on prospects, right? You know, they're, depending on your contention cycle, that's going to really determine their value to you. And it should determine the market value as well in your league.
Yeah, my general approach with them, prospects, and maybe this is the wrong approach, but guys that have that high of value like Acuna, I honestly tend to just avoid completely trying to acquire, unless they happen to fall in my lap where my contention cycle is such that I have the top pick in the draft when it's their turn to go through the first-year player draft. Other than that, I just tend to avoid trying to acquire them at all, because if you are trying to compete and then you start trying to target Acuna, or like a top end prospect like that, you're gonna have to end up gutting your team to the point where now you're not gonna be trying to compete anymore. And if you already are competing, if you're at a contention cycle where you're competing for a title, then it doesn't make any sense to try and go after him at that point, because by the time that he's going to be in the majors, your window might be closed. So my typical thought is not that there'll be another Acuna, but there'll be another prospect that'll be serviceable in the majors, and I tend to just avoid them.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to look at big name prospects like this. There always will be another one, and if you are trying to contend, then they're probably not the best investment for your team. I think that rounds out the top 25 on the list here. Let's move on to 26 through 50, and seeing Clayton Kershaw at number 26, I thought was a little bit nutty. Keaton, I think you agree. I think we all agree that Kershaw is a little too low at 26. But Keaton, why don't you lead us off with that and tell us why you think he's too low?
Yeah, I was surprised to see the first pitcher in at 26. I figured mid-teens probably is where we'd end up seeing the first pitcher being Kershaw. 26 seemed low. And then looking at who is in the mid-teens, that's probably where I would still value Kershaw, back issues and all. If we're going to end up getting 160, 175 innings out of Kershaw, they're still going to be the best 160, 175 innings in baseball. Ton of strikeouts, no walks. That's really all what you're looking for in an ace. And he's not real old. And honestly, pitchers... nowadays, it seems like once they hit 30, now they're in their prime versus, you know, hitters, once they hit 30, it's, Patrick alluded to in the first base rankings, I believe he had a memorial service for a player who turned 30, in the first base rankings, I think.
Yeah, that's, that was Paul Goldschmidt.
yeah, there you go. So, but now, I mean, the trend is, really when, like, you got, Carrasco and Greinke and Scherzer, all these guys really turned it on once I got to 30 years old. So I'm not afraid of pitchers that are in their approaching 30 or in their young 30s. That's doesn't scare me away in a dynasty league anymore. So I still think Kershaw's got plenty of years ahead of him. So it's not like he has a small window and he's still going to be one of the best pitcher for at least the next 3 to 5 years. So he's still definitely the first pitcher off the board. And looking at, so the mid-teens is like Bellinger at 15, Sanchez at 16, Jose Ramirez at 17. That's probably where I'd stick him.
Yeah, that seems about the space that I was thinking too, probably in that range there. Patrick, why don't you tell us about why you think Eloy Jimenez is too low at number 41?
I think that Eloy Jimenez is low, too low, and mostly just due to, why are we ranking these other prospects so much higher than him in the list? And then my boy Eloy has to be so low. That's one thing. I'm just a little hurt that he's not higher. For instance, I'd probably rather own Eloy than say, I don't know. Like I said, Bryce put a really good list together. I definitely would have him over Victor Robles. That's for sure. Victor Robles is up at 23, and I think that Eloy is closer to the majors, and I don't think he's going to struggle with big league pitching. I think that he's going to hop in and be a middle of the order bat. He's not going to give you speed if that's what you're looking for, so you might be better off with some of the other well-known outfield prospects. But for me, it just feels like if we're sort of inflating the value of, say, like Acuna and Victor Robles, then that's what it just feels disrespectful to my boy.
Okay. I don't know if disrespectful is the word I'd go for, but sure. Within the context of this list where we have
these
a little bit higher.
Yeah, like I said, Brett's put together a wonderful list here. This is honestly super nitpicking. I just feel like he's underrepresented in the fantasy community as a whole, and that's really why I picked him, just because he feels low on this list in comparison to other prospects, and he's ELO to me.
Ugh.
I think he's properly ranked. That's where I'd have him. If I were to do my own top 500, which I am not, that's where I'd have him.
Yeah, God bless anybody that ranks 500 players. I mean, I've ranked 300, and that's insanity.
Yeah, hats off. Should have started off with hats off to Brett for doing this, but yeah. All right, so Keaton, you think Eloy is properly ranked there at 41. You think that Josh Donaldson at 42 is too high?
Well, as we alluded to earlier, all hitters die once they get to 30, and Donaldson is 32 and has missed some time with injuries recently. His strikeout rate has slowly been creeping up. So that's a little concerning. And his OBP dropped about 20 points from 2016 and 2017 injury shortened season, but the strikeout rate is kind of what's most concerning. Yeah, it was 5.5%, which season over season regression, that's a major uptick, which is concerning to me. That's a big red flag. Added with his age added onto it, there's just some guys behind him that I think have a better track record that I would take over him. Kluber, for instance, probably basically like the 10 guys behind him, I'd probably put him 10 spots lower there. So Kluber is immediately behind him, then Wilson Contreras, JD Martinez, Reese Hoskins, and Steven Strasburg. I won't go just through all the names, but just to give you an idea of who's right behind him, I would take all those guys ahead of Josh Donaldson.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with sort of the being down on Donaldson, although I'm not sure if I would take put him 10 spots lower. Just to add on to all of the points you made, are you concerned with him being out of Toronto as well? Because he's in the last year of his contract. And for me, that's like, that's kind of a big deal too, because that's a pretty great offensive part for him to play in. How do you feel about it?
It's a little concerning. Rogers Center is a pretty good park. ESPN has it ranked as the fourth best hitter's park. The fact that he's in a walk year, and he's either not going to have contract extensions with Toronto, or he already told him that he's walking. So you can either probably expect a decent year this year and then it to fall off. But wherever he goes it's a very limited number of ballparks that would be a better place for him to hit. So, yeah, his age, the regressions in the strikeouts, and that is a little concerning that he's not going to be hitting in one of the better hitters' parks in the bigs.
Yeah, good call, Patrick. Good point to focus in on there. I think I agree with you guys now. Going into this, looking at the notes, I didn't think he was too high there, but you guys have convinced me. I'm on board. Keaton thought that Donaldson was too high at 40. Patrick, you think that Nomar Mazara is too high at number 39. Why don't you tell us why?
Yeah, I'm happy to talk about Nomar. So I have gone from someone that loved Mazara to someone that has kind of sold him in most leagues. I understand that he's 22 and has been serviceable in the major leagues. He has a great approach at the plate. However, he cannot hit lefties well. He batted .234 against them last year. And actually, that was 2016. In 2017, his average, I believe, against lefties dropped even more to .228. And then, yeah, his career home runs, if you look at them for the splits, he has a career home run. He has 38 career home runs against righties and 2 against left-handed pitchers. So for me, that's enough to deserve a bump down.
I think that's fair. That's a good analysis. I would agree. Good call. All right, so that rounds up our top 50. Let's take a look at the back end here. We'll jump to, we'll take 51 through 100 as a whole here. Keats, let's start with you. You find Starling Marte at 57 too high. Now, Marte is one of those speed guys, so are you cribbing from Patrick here? Is that why you think he's too high? Or do you have your own thoughts on why he's too high?
Marte is at 57, which I think is a bit aggressive coming off of his suspension of PED. When he returned from suspension, he was not very good, which is a little concerning. It was a small sample, so how much the PED was actually helping him, who knows. But he was also really, really bad this winter in the Dominican League to the point where he was actually just dropped from his Dominican team because he was that bad. So that is super concerning. I would like to see Marte come back and still be a decent baseball player before ranking him that aggressively in the top 500 at number 57, just purely based off of his performance when he came back from suspension was not good.
I think that's a good call. Let's have him show us a little bit more before he gets right back on the list. I mean, then again, he's probably, this does represent a drop for him, I'm sure. But by the same token, maybe he can stand to drop a little lower until he proves it. Or more to the point, can affirmatively show that he is not bad like he did last year, as you say, Keaton. So.
Yeah, sorry, I mean, I just wanted to chime in about Marte just a second. If you look at some of the guys that are, listed below him too, like Severino in particular, despite him being a Yankee, I am a Severino lover. I love that guy. And I would certainly have him above Marte. I'd have I know there's some concerns with Conforto coming off injury, but I'd have Conforto over him as far as outfielders go. He's got to come back and show something. He's 29, finished the year terribly. I can't believe he was designated for assignment by his Dominican league. Poor guy. Poor Marte. Shouldn't have done those drugs, man. Don't do drugs.
Yeah, he started off like 0-for-8 with 6 strikeouts, and he lasted like 4 games and got cut. Some absurd thing like that.
Let's jump from Keaton thinking Starling Marte is too high at 57. Patrick, Kenley Jansen, you think he's too high at 69. Nice. Tell me why.
With Jansen, I don't know. I mean, he's obviously super good. He's obviously an elite reliever. It's really a context thing and about where his rank is in comparison to, say, someone like, Robbie Ray or, even Will Myers or there are just a million players that I would draft before him or, I just can't see myself in almost any scenario where I would trade, Will Myers or even though I don't like him, Eric Hosmer for him. I just as a relief pitcher, I understand that he racks up the Ks, but he's 30 years old and a 30-year-old reliever. I know he's elite. I know he's the best. But can we say that he's going to continue that for 3 to 5 years? And can we say that's safer than the players that are listed below him? I can't. I can't and I won't.
That's one take. I think when talking about the age of players, I think relief pitcher might be one of the areas where you can rely on a guy getting a little bit older. Given the very limited workload that they have, assuming injuries don't wreck their shoulder or elbow or anything too significantly, you've got guys, Fernando Rodney's 41 or something, and he still has a job this year. So I don't know if I agree that you got to worry about the age of relievers.
You heard it here, folks. You heard it here first. That's right. Kenley Jansen is the next Fernando Rodney.
Well, I mean, I was going to say how old was Mariano Rivera when he was when he hung up the cleats, but to say any player is going to be the next Mariano Rivera is a little bit silly. So even, you know what, the worst case scenario, if he is the next Fernando Rodney, then he's still a closer for the next decade. Patrick.
Trevor Hoffman, like 43?
Yeah. So you can get all sad. You can sass me all you want, but you proved my point, so thank you.
There's actually there's an article on Fangraphs that says that Kenley Jansen is the next Mariano Rivera, in case you were curious.
Well, there you go. Now, to jump to a point that you made, Patrick, you said you couldn't really, and I'm going to jump this to Keaton from here, you said you couldn't really envision a scenario where you would take Jansen at this point or trade the guys around him for this guy. I seem to recall Keaton in some of the drafts that you talked about, either I think we talked about it on one of the earlier podcasts, like your sort of draft strategy, where you tend to jump in on high-risk pitchers and try and even that out by getting more reliable closers to kind of balance out your squad a little bit. Is with that strategy in mind, do you think that Kenley Jansen at 69, nice, is a proper spot for him? Would you take him there?
Well, see, the interesting piece about that strategy is there's so many good relievers that you can get a reliever that's going to pitch 2-3 innings a week to stabilize. That's not Kenley Jansen. So Michael Gibbons comes to mind. Carson Smith, Addison Reed. All those guys are going to have strong ratios, low whip, low ERA, and pitch 2-3 innings a week. So my strategy is to cover saves with getting a couple guys, and then fill out the rest of the typically there's like one or two or three starting pitcher positions. There's two or three relief pitcher, and then there's usually a handful of just interchangeable P's. And I usually fill out all of the other P spots with relievers that I know are going to get innings and have solid ratios. Like a guy that actually helped me in the Tino Listener League last year win the title, big guy, thanks to actually Patrick, a trade that I made with Patrick, was Mike Minor. He was the eighth inning guy that you could get super cheap last year and had great results. So it's not that I wouldn't take Jansen there, but filling out that particular strategy, I wouldn't necessarily try and reach for a guy. I would just, you know, cover saves and then look to cover the ratios with relief pitchers that will have strong ratios and just try and be able to supplement the risk in the starting pitchers that I'll end up drafting.
All right. Well, that was interesting. That's good. Even in that sort of strategy where for you relievers are a premium piece and a central part of your plan, you still wouldn't take him that high. So that's interesting. Brett, we do not agree with you on Kenley Jansen. So think he's too high. Let's talk. Let's jump over to Patrick. How about you? We know that you love Ian Happ. You've said it before. So why don't you briefly go over, just sort of rehash why you love him and think he's too low at number 77.
Yeah, I think, a lot of the hate on him comes from his questionable playing time, which we discussed earlier is not really a problem. 77 is not necessarily too low. It's too low for me because I love Ian Happ and I think that he should be above, certainly above Yu Darvish at 76, which I know might turn some heads. Go read our triple play if you're interested on my thoughts on Darvish. Triple play for the Chicago Cubs. I like Happ's profile. If you want to know more about my thoughts on Happ's profile, go check out our last podcast because I talk about him quite a bit.
Now, Keats, we have talked about Bo Bichette in the past. We've got him. Brett has him on the list at 99. You think he is too low? Keaton was able, or Patrick was able to succinctly rehash his thoughts. So why don't you rehash yours on Bo?
He's very good. He's very young. Performed over expectations for his age.
That was great. And I say that without a hint of irony. That was very, very good, and I liked it a lot. That haiku skill coming back. All right. Well, that's the first fifth of the list here. We've gone through 1 through 100. So instead of going through the back of the bottom four-fifths of the list 25 at a time, we thought we'd just focus on a couple of guys that we think are going to be either huge jumpers or huge droppers, specifically guys who we think will jump 50 spots or more or who will drop 50 spots or more. Let's start with the exciting stuff. Let's dream. Let's dream a little dream, you guys. Let's talk about those guys who we think are going to jump 50 spots or more. I guess we'll get this one out of the way. Patrick?
Yes,
Ian? I just wish that we could get somewhere on the internet your recorded thoughts on Matt Olson. I feel like you haven't been clear enough about your thoughts on Matt Olson. So here is your opportunity to talk about Matt Olson. And by that, I mean, please rehash the other 37 times you've talked about him.
Okay, I do feel bad about talking about him again, but he's ranked extremely low. Brett, what is with your hate for Matt Olson? I don't understand. Also, have you guys... 163. He's ranked 163rd on this list. No. And he will not be there. Brett will see the light after Olsen is smashing bombs soon. I'll just give you some stats that I like. His average exit velocity last year was 92.13, which is above league average. He has a crazy launch angle of 16.93, which is comparable to, say, somebody like Miguel Sano, who has at least a similar exit velocity. His exit velocity is actually only 0.13 miles per hour higher. I think that Olsen's going to turn into Sano-esque. Big, you know, just my kind of player. Knows the strike zone extremely well. Smashes the baseball.
Doesn't steal.
He does not steal at all, which I love. He ranked 5th in barrels per plate appearance last year. Ranked 12th in average exit velocity. He ranked 90th in average distance. He hit 12 home runs at home, 12 away. So even though he's hitting the ball in Oakland, which is not a hitter-friendly park, he's doing the job. That's how powerful this man is. His big problem is lefties, and we'll see what happens there. But like I said, you know, if Jake Lamb, who struggles with opposite-handed pitching, can, or rather, same-handed side pitching can make it, then Olsen can make it too.
I mean, ranked 167 out of, you know, all of baseball, which is like 3,000 players, it's pretty high.
And when you consider there are only like a few thousand guys who can even play baseball, Brett has Matt Olsen ranked as one of the best players in the world. So I feel like you're being a little unfair to him.
I'm not at all, but thank you.
I'm just...
To tag along on that, though, in the AMA today, I was asked if there's anybody outside the top 100 that I think could jump into the top 20, and I picked Matt Olsen just for you, Patrick.
Yes, I'm not alone. There are people.
Olsen... I didn't believe it. I just picked him for you.
Whatever. The Matt Olsenites are growing. We are growing.
Well, Keaton, I think this. Go ahead.
I just want
to. I swear to God, if this
is no, 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 no.
I swear to God.
It is, but it's good. I want to pledge an oath to talk about Matt Olsen less on this podcast, at least until the season starts.
Okay, thank you. And after that, you can have a 5-second recurring segment on Matt Olsen on every podcast, and then that'll be it. So you have to pick your one favorite Matt Olsen highlight from the previous week, and then you can talk about it.
I'll just continue to tweet Matt Olsen home runs. You can just follow. You can follow my love there.
Perfect.
Yeah, there Patrick's go. Twitter account has turned into the MLB home run tracker for Matt Olsen.
Well, Patrick had his state-sanctioned Matt Olsen minute just now. Keaton, I don't know if we've heard your thoughts on Eddie Rosario before, but you feel strongly enough about him that you think he's going to jump 50 spots or more here. He's actually ranked right next to Matt Olsen at 162, but tell me why you think he's going to bounce.
Yeah, he's an interesting case. He's actually kind of always hit the ball hard and had great launch angles. His average launch angle over the last 3 years has been 14 degrees, 11 degrees, and 12 degrees, which is all three of those well above average compared to the league. So that piece is kind of impressive. He's hit the ball hard consistently, which is good to see. And then last year, he was able to cut his strikeout rate by 7.5% and increase his walk rate. So he actually started to become much, much more disciplined at the plate, along with his hitting the ball really hard and in the air, and that led to a significant increase in his home run per fly ball rate, which jumped 5%, and that led to him having a pretty awesome year. 27 home runs, hit 290, 18% K rate, which is slightly below league average. Walk rate still pretty low at 6%, but that was almost double what it was the previous 2 years. So that's good to see. That raises OBP quite a bit, and he's 26 years old. So I think he's a guy that if he continues that trend, that we could see him in the top 75 come the end of the year.
Who do you think will be ranked higher, both of you? So
Eddie Rosario, not Matt Olson.
Are you kidding? Are you crazy? That's ridiculous.
It's ranked higher than him right now.
I know, but that's just because Brett hasn't been converted yet. He will be. Once this list is updated, you will see.
This sounds like a perfect opportunity for a little bit of fun wager.
Yep, this is happening.
Keats, your guy is Eddie Rosario. Patrick, your guy is Matt Olson. I think we should just do head-to-head rather than if either one of them will jump 50 spots or more. But depending on who is ranked higher at the end of next year, or at this list.
It's the midway point, right? We're just going to go with the July midseason update? Or are we going next year's beginning of the year?
The next time that this list is updated, we'll see who is higher on the list. And whoever is high, whoever Brett likes more, that's how we determine it.
Wow. Okay. I would have said wait until next season, but
yeah,
sure.
I like it. Mid-season update. Brett's gonna
mid-season
do,
update. Sure.
He's gonna have them both ranked at like 110 just to mess with us.
All right. Sounds like we have ourselves a full-fledged bet. We'll figure out the terms later. But in the meantime, no communication with Brett about either Eddie Rosario or Matt Olson. Otherwise, I'll come up with some way to punish either of you. So, with the dreaming a little dream out of the way, let's see who we think will be taking a tumble down the list. Who will drop 50 spots or more on this list? Patrick, we talked about Josh Donaldson before. I think this probably ties into a little bit. You kind of played your hand a little bit already.
Yeah, and really we can move on, but it's really just all of the points that Keaton discussed earlier. That's it. I'm concerned about the age and leaving Rogers Center. That's all, and everything else that Keaton said. It's in full effect here.
Sure, sounds good. And Keaton, you. You don't have nice things to think about David Price. Why don't you go over that a little bit? I assume that a lot of this stuff was covered in the Triple Play piece that you, Patrick, and Adam Lawler wrote. And I don't know if we've talked about it on the podcast. You guys do a Triple Play series of articles. But is that sort of covered in that, or are there other thoughts on top of that?
Yeah, Adam does a great job outlining why David Price is a good bet to fall and keep falling. There's a chance that he can turn it around. He's in a potential contract year, even though he says he's not going to opt out. But there's that chance. So I don't think I need to rehash a ton of it, but mainly everything that Adam points out is his pitch selection, velocity, bunch of other stuff is in the toilet. So there's like a 15% chance he can either maintain this or maybe climb a few spots in the midseason if he has a good season. But I think all signs are pointing to him just continuing to fall.
Keaton, I think that's a great call on Price. So we promised you guys last week that we would cover outfield because, quote, we had a lot to say about them. But here we are pretty late into the podcast, so I don't know if we're going to be able to get super in-depth with these guys. There's going to be a little bit of overlap here. We talked about some of the outfielders in the top 500 here, but instead of our trademark super deep back and forth analysis, we're probably going to speed up a little bit on these guys. But get to them we will, because y'all have drafts going on and you guys need some analysis on this. So let's start with outfielders 1 through 20. Patrick, we talked about Buxton within the context of the top 500. He clocked in at number 20 on the top 500. In the outfield list, he clocked in at number 15. So you think it's too high, even within the context of outfielders there. So tell me, obviously, your thoughts were pretty well defined in the top 500 talk, but if there's anything else you want to add or talk about where you would have him on the list instead, would you go ahead?
Yeah, I'm certainly happy to talk about where I'd have him on the list instead, being that I've really spouted all of my hate for him. I would drop him below, probably below Michael Conforto, maybe right above Starling Marte at 19. I think 19 to 20 might be a good place for him on this list. Looking at it, even lower maybe, because I like, we have guys like Chris Davis at 22 and so I would certainly maybe down in the 20s, probably near Tommy Pham. Let's say about that, near Tommy Pham at 23. And I'd even consider having Pham above him, which I know might not be popular. I'm sorry if you're very angry listeners. But yeah, obviously I've made it clear I'm very down on him, and that's it. I'd have him down there in that mid-20 range.
Fair enough. That tracks with what you said earlier. All right, well, Patrick, while I've got you here, Byron Buxton's too high. Let's talk about a guy you think is too low. Rhys Hoskins, you've got at number 16, actually just past Byron Buxton. Where would you have him on the list, and why do you think he's too low?
If there's a guy in that is comparable for love, my Matt Olson love, it's got to be Rhys Hoskins, because he is magnificent. It's interesting that like he didn't pick up more steam prior to his call up. I know that he was a name, but a lot of people seem to doubt him. But looking through his numbers, everything is really translated. Now, he walked at a 17.5 clip last year, and I don't expect him to continue to do that. if he did, he's basically playing in a video game, and that's fantastic. But, it's probably closer to, it's still in the double digits, but probably closer to like 12, maybe, right? And I expect him to hit for power, like maybe close to 40 home runs with a high average, because he puts on great at-bats. The dude sees 4.65 pitches per plate appearance, which is good. So I think he is ranked far too low on this list. I would have him quite a bit higher. I like him more than, say, like Andrew Benintendi at 10. He's a top 10 outfielder for me.
All right. Keaton, if you have no thoughts on Rhys Hoskins or Byron Buxton, why don't you talk to us about Michael Conforto at number 18?
I think that Conforto should be in the low teen range, in the kind of that Buxton Hoskins range, like 13, 13, 14 range. There obviously is little concerned with the injury and how he's going to come back from that, but he's got a ton of talent. I'm a huge Conforto fan, and I bought into all of his talent and skill pre-injury. I think he's going to be okay coming out of it, and his long-term value, I think, is still good. And it's kind of coupled with, I agreed with Patrick on moving Buxton down, and so it's kind of also kind of included in that, and then J.D. Martinez's age. So with Conforto's age and upside, moving him up into that range ahead of those guys in that 12, 13, 14 area.
Sure. Makes sense. And the guy you had listed at too high, Starling Marte, I think we kind of covered him already, so I don't really think we need to rehash him either. All right. Jumping from 1 through 20, let's jump to 21 through 50. Keaton, Ender Enciarte. I think I said that right, and if I didn't, I don't. Well, I do care, but I'm not going to go back and fix it. You think he's too low at number 38? Why and where would you have him?
I think that Ender Enciarte should be higher and definitely ahead of Adam Eaton. So right now, Ender Enciarte is 38. Adam Eaton is at 33. And at a minimum, I would have Enciarte ahead of Adam Eaton. So Enciarte has essentially been Adam Eaton light, but kind of better. So he's kind of flown under the radar. And he is 2 years younger. Ender Enciarte strikeout rates 5% lower. Their walk rates are relatively similar. And Ender Enciarte is actually stealing more bases than Adam Eaton is, which obviously Adam Eaton is more known for his steals than his on base abilities. They're almost essentially the same player, but Enciarte being younger, less strikeouts, and a few more steals. So I would definitely, between the two, Enciarte is my guy. And I would move Enciarte up probably 8 to 10 spots here in the outfielders list.
All right, Patrick, let's talk about Yasiel Puig. You think he's too low at 29?
I do indeed. Admittedly, this could be possibly because I just love watching Yasiel Puig play, and fun players for me always get a bump. But I also really believe in the skills that he showed last year. He finally stayed healthy and got himself a full season of at-bats, 570 at-bats are the most since 2014. And in 2014, he put up, not as much power and speed. He was a younger man back in those days, I guess. But similar walk rates. He walked 10.5% in 2014. He walked 11.2% in 2017. He struck out more in 2014. He struck out almost 20%. And last year, he brought it down to 17.5%. And so, yeah, I think the Dodgers have finally figured out how to deploy him in a way where he is not going to get injured. He, 570 might be the maximum of bats he gets. So especially they have a ton of outfield talent and they play everybody everywhere. But yeah, I think he's going to hit, mid 20s to 30s in home runs and provide somewhere around, 15, probably about 15 stolen bases I think that walk rate is going to carry through as long as he stays healthy. I think health has been the primary issue for Puig, and that's where I'm at. I think he deserves a bump. I probably put him at 16 or 17 on this list, definitely above Justin Upton for sure.
That makes sense. It's a good analysis of Puig there. All right, so now Keaton, you think that AJ Pollock is a little too high at 25. Where would you have him drop down to?
Yeah, honestly, I'd slide him down kind of a lot between the 35 to 50 range. Since coming back from his injury, he's hasn't been nearly as good. His average has dropped. Last year he hit 260, 266. His walk rate took a significant step back. It was 4% lower. His home runs were less than his what he had in 2015, which was his breakout year when he came out and hit 315, 20 homers, 111 RBIs. But on top of that, and what kind of what's more alarming is his fly ball rate dropped 16%. So he's just not hitting the ball in the air anymore. He's not hitting the ball in the air anymore, and he's just not getting nearly as many hits. So I think we all kind of, like we talked on the last pod about having like a vision of what a guy, you know, was at one time. And that's kind of what we hold on to. And I think that's maybe what's happening here with Pollock is we have that vision of him from that really good season. But he just hasn't gotten back there yet. And so at what point do we just kind of let that sink in that he's not that player anymore? After suffering a pretty significant injury, and he just may not be able to get back there.
Yeah, that's fair. That's a good call. All right. So outfield is one of the longer lists that we have, second only to starting pitcher as far as positional rankings go. So this back end is from 51 through 25, and that's where we're going to pick a dude that you think is improperly ranked there instead of go through each too low, too high there. Patrick, why don't you tell me about Jorge Soler at number 99?
Yeah, I'd love to. Post hype, Jorge Soler. I am really excited about him. If he, you know, I assume he'll get a job with the Royals, but who knows? The Royals are the Royals, and they're sometimes insane. But yeah, so the things that I like about Soler is that he has shown good plate skills, and then also had the StatCast stuff to back up his possible breakout. I'm predicting a possible breakout for Jorge Soler. You heard it here first, Dynasty Guru listeners. Basically, he walks at a decent clip and he hits the ball very high and far. I think that those of you that play in OBP leagues should be trying to acquire and roster him. I've found it difficult to acquire him because owners tend to love the players that they have. And, you know, I think Soler had a lot of hype and people are not willing to just let go of him. But check in with your league's owner. See if you can get him cheap, because I refuse to believe that he's going to be behind Paulo Orlando. I think he gets one more chance this year, and I think that it's going to result in something beautiful. The K's are a concern, but the walk rate and how hard he hits the ball for me are worth the flyer.
And Keaton, you had thoughts on Taylor Trammell at number 67. I think you may have already covered him in the past. Is that right?
I did. I wrote a wonderful triple play article, which I know is kind of a relative secret on the Dynasty Guru content scale. It's not talked about a ton, but you should definitely go check it out. He's 20 years old, got up to high A last year, and he has a chance to be like a significant five tool guy, and he's not super high on people's radars yet. He went relatively unchecked in first year player drafts. I don't think in any of the leagues I was in he was owned, which is kind of surprising. And then he has power potential, average potential, really strong OBP skills. And on top of that, you know, he was able to increase his walk rate and cut down on the strikeouts as he increased from, and not a huge jump from low A to high A, but still increased competition. So it's good when that trend works out that way as they move up. So looking for him to continue that trend again next year. And I think he's a guy. He also had Patrick's favorite 41 steals last year. So he's a guy that can contribute in all phases of the game.
Well, we know how important steals are for Patrick. So that is a great, great tidbit. Excellent. All right, guys. Any closing thoughts on the top 500 or the outfield rankings that we just worked through. Because otherwise, that is it for us.
I think that's a wrap.
For the listeners at home, this is the, I think, fifth time that we've had to.
Oh, no, it's more than five. This is like the sixth time. So
yeah,
that we've had to. We've had a stutter step in the recording. So if you can hear the energy progressively dropping at points in the podcast, then you know why. But we have mercifully reached the end here. So
let's give ourselves a hand, guys. This was great. Hey, great job. Great. Really. We really did it. We made it.
We got through it. Good job, guys.
We powered through for you, the fans.
That's right. For you, the listeners.
We do this for you. All right. This has been the Dynasty Guru Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I've been your host, Ian Hudson. You can find my hand at the Dynasty Guru in some portion of the articles there. Especially anywhere enamored by has been replaced with enamored with. And most anywhere which has been replaced with that. And you can find me on Twitter at USF Hudson, but I am not a very good follow. You can find Keaton online at The Spoken Keats on Twitter. And you can find Patrick at The Green Magnus on Twitter. I would normally ask you guys what you've written recently, but we've been dominated by the rankings. So what do you have coming out soon?
More triple play pieces. The next piece is Colorado. And now that we are post rankings, everybody will be kind of settling into more content. And then I am also partaking in the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational in League 7. If you want to follow along with my draft and see how I'm doing, I have already been shamed for picking a catcher at pick 55, which I thought was reasonable. It happens. So I'm sure I'll be publicly shamed more as that draft goes on. So
yeah, you seem to get a lot of shame for your catcher love there, Keaton. I'm sorry. The triple play, we have the Colorado piece coming up. I wrote about Trevor Story. So go read that, and go read our Cleveland piece as well, because there's some really good stuff in there. I think it might have slipped through the cracks, and worth the read. And follow me on Twitter, because I need more followers than Keaton, and he's still having more than me. Remember, at the Green Magnus, I know that Ian already plugged it, but I want more followers than Keaton.
The thirst is real. So the Dynasty Guru plugs, our parent site here. You can find them on Twitter at Dynasty Guru. Join the Facebook group. There's some great conversations going on over there. And you can email us at dynastyguru@gmail.com. And, you know, if you like what we do over here and want to help us keep the lights on, and more importantly, if you're looking for an easy to access and navigate composite of all the rankings that we have, all of our positional rankings, Jesse Roach's top 200 prospects, Tom Trudeau's top 500 for OBP leagues, and Brett Sayer's top 500 for standard leagues in downloadable form. If you want to donate a minimum of $5 to us over on the main page, we can make that happen for you. That's going to do it for us over here. Have a good day, and as always, stay goldie.